Chapter 3. Stephen and Mark. Mark felt relieved, and slightly guilty, to discover that Stephen also had no idea of what was going on. Artish appeared to be a low-level administrator going through a standard check-in process. He was trying to rush through a well-rehearsed orientation presentation because it was midday and he didn't want to miss lunch. His orientation overview explained that they were in a camp designed and staffed to train people in advanced magic, fighting, and prophecy. Soul Reapers appeared in the valley every few years with 4 conjoined candidates to be prepared as heroes destined to fulfill an ancient prophecy. And they would also bring someone like Janice. "So the Soul Reapers aren't terrifying creatures?" asked Stephen. "No, they are terrifying," Artish disagreed. "But the food will be gone if you keep asking questions." Mark wanted to ask about Artish's apparent dislike of Janice, but decided not to ask until after lunch. Artish told them that candidates typically arrived shortly after their 13th birthdays in either March or April, trained hard for 2 to 3 months before leaving on their journey before mid-year. Their preparation was arduous and limited because the candidates had to become heroes and fulfill the prophecy before their next birthday. "Why before their birthday?" Mark blurted out. Artish glared at him and said, "Because you can only be conjoined in your prime." "But that's ridiculous," laughed Stephen. "Everyone knows that you don't reach your prime until you're 18 or 20, although perhaps I am already there." He flexed his arms and admired his physique. "No, both your ages must be prime numbers," grumbled Artish. Then, seeing Stephen's perplexed expression, added, "Marius, would you be kind enough to enlighten Stephen about prime numbers while I work on these forms?" Mark tried to explain that a prime number is any number which can only be divided by 1 or by itself to create an integer. He gave examples like 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, and 19, but gave up when Stephen asked what the term divided meant. Artish shook his head and explained to Mark that the people here had a minimal educational background. Few can do more than simple addition and subtraction, almost no one can read or write, and there's virtually no concept of any form of science. "Think about it," said Artish. "We have magic, so we have little need to study, build, or calculate. Who needs engineering if all it takes to build a house is leaning some sticks together and enchanting the structure? Who needs chemistry if you can magically transform a glass of water into wine or beer? Who needs medicine if you can charm a cold away? Math and science disappeared a long time ago in this world, if they ever existed at all. Now, I must insist, no more questions before lunch."
"So we're part of the next group of heroes, and we're going on a quest," Mark asked, despite Mr. Artish's request. Both Stephen and Mark were starting to feel excited.
"No, you are part of the next group of heroes to attempt to fulfill the prophecy," groaned Artish. "There is only one prophecy, and we've been training and sending heroes to attempt to fulfill it for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. And please, don't use the word quest. It makes all this sound like some medieval fantasy game."
"But if no one has ever succeeded, what happens to the heroes?" asked Stephen as he felt his stomach begin to churn.
"How are we supposed to prepare you foolish boys to save the world if you can't even understand and follow a simple rule about no questions before lunch?" bellowed Artish as he began walking toward the cave entrance. "No heroes have ever succeeded, and few have ever been seen again. Are you happy? Now do you understand why we don't discuss this before a meal? That's it. We're done for now. Follow me."
Stephen trotted after Artish as Mark mentally started to ask what Stephen thought never being seen again meant. Stephen interrupted his thought to suggest that they follow Artish's advice. The cave was cool and dry, with the aroma of dust and old sweat which swirled up as they moved. The massive chamber rapidly diminished to a 10-foot-high and 10-foot-wide tunnel which twisted around for 100 feet before opening onto a gravel landing midway up a hill. Stephen paused to shield his eyes when they stepped out of the cave into the brilliant sunlight. He took a moment to enjoy the view of the valley below. A small river snaked along the cliff base below them to create an oxbow island in the middle of the valley. There was a narrow road leading down the hill from the cave mouth, which wound through the broad field before crossing a bridge to the island. Mark thought the grassy field looked like it was set up for a sort of knight's tournament, with banners furling in the light breeze. The island was filled with stone cottages, with 20 or 30 people milling about a public square. Mark truly felt like he was in a medieval fantasy game, despite Mr. Ertish's dislike of the comparison.
"This is no time to play, tourist," Ertish shouted. He was already far below them. "If you don't hurry, you'll go hungry."
Stephen jogged to catch up to Ertish at the bridge, which Mark thought was the most fantastical structure he'd ever seen. It spanned the river in one graceful arch and was wide enough for two carts to pass. The structure was constructed out of perfectly shaped stones so accurately placed that there were almost no visible gaps. The road was smoothly paved, and there were flags and banners draped over the sides and fluttering from poles set in the railings. This was more than a bridge. This was a gateway built to welcome victorious heroes. He thought, "Wow, this is amazing." The gateway was decorated with triumphant statues of heroes atop polished black granite pedestals in front of the bridge. Those pedestals were so highly polished that they not only reflected the bright sunshine, they reflected passers-by, which enabled Mark to see Stephen for the first time. Stephen was about 6 feet tall and muscular. He had tight, curly hair, a moderately dark complexion, and would have been a movie or a rock star on Earth. He stood out even here, where everyone seemed to be good-looking. Stephen caught Mark staring at the pedestal, and Mark hurriedly looked away in embarrassment. Stephen muttered, "I've seen better." Ertish was so focused on lunch that he paid no attention to the gleaming bridge. They briskly walked across the bridge and arrived in the small village. There were nods of greeting to Ertish as they joined the end of the lunch line in the square, providing Mark another opportunity to inspect his surroundings. He could tell he wasn't anywhere on Earth. It just felt magical. The village looked like a movie set where everything was perfect and nothing was rotting or under construction. Mark could smell lunch cooking, but there was no smoke. He found that the air was purer than any he had ever breathed. There was no exhaust smell, traffic noise, or airplane contrails. It was pristine. It was too perfect to be anything back home. Mark was jostled out of his reverie by a cook roughly asking what he wanted. He saw corn, green beans, a variety of lentil soup, rice, and bread. He asked, "Do you have any meat?" And the cook grunted, "Hey, everyone, we have a new arrival." Stephen silenced Mark and took a little of everything. He silently explained that all animals, like people, contained magical essence, and that consuming magical essence was a painful dietary mistake which should be avoided at all costs. He added that the rule wasn't limited to meat, though. A magically ripened mango would have the same painful result because it was infused with magical essence. However, there was no harm in using magic to weed gardens or to prepare food. "So you mean there's no bacon on this planet?" thought Mark. "What's bacon?" thought Stephen. "Never mind, you just shattered my fantasy of how perfect this place is," lamented Mark. They walked over to the small table where Ertish was waving at them.
"Welcome to the hero's table," he mumbled with a mouthful of food.
Mark and Stephen sat at a table with 6 seats positioned nearest to the food. The remaining 15 to 20 people sat crowded together at one enormously long table a few feet away, with Janice sitting by himself at the far end. "So now that we're safely eating lunch, can you tell us a little more about this place?" asked Mark, while Ertish stuffed his face with food.
"Sure, what would you like to know?" mumbled Ertish with a mouthful of food as he reached for a mug of water.
"Well, why don't you start by telling us where we are? Stephen calls his place Earth, but Mark knows this isn't the same as his Earth," said Stephen slash Mark, who were getting very confused with whose words were coming out of their mouth.
"You're both right, of course," answered Ertish after he finished his drink. "This isn't Mark's Earth, and you aren't speaking the same language. You can understand each other because you know each other's thoughts before they get translated into words. And Mark, before you ask, you know what other people are saying here because your host's mind is doing the translation into thoughts you can interpret. So Earth is just the name both of you give the planet upon which you live. You also use the same words for the moon, the sun, our two neighboring planets, Venus and Mars, although the residents of this Earth prefer to call the moon Luna.
I hear what you're saying, but doesn't it get confusing calling both places by the same name since they're so different?" asked Mark.
"I suppose so," answered Ertish as he reached for a biscuit.
but it doesn't come up as much as you might suspect. After all, our visitors don't remember their dreams when they wake up, and our hosts can never travel to their Earth. There is rarely a reason to talk about the two places in the same conversation. I assure you that while it feels awkward right now, you'll never even think about it once you're fully conjoined. But it's confusing. I'm going to call this place Mirth, which is short for Magical Earth, proclaimed Mark. Ertish stared at him and said, Please don't. That is just stupid. Mark glared back at him and said, You call it what you like, and I'll call it what I like. Then he changed the subject and asked, How does time work on these two worlds? It seems like I can be here for days, and yet I wake up the morning after going to bed on Earth. Ah, a fair question, answered Ertish, happy to be talking about something other than planetary names. It will settle down once you're fully conjoined. Time passages on the two worlds are not well understood, but are somewhat synchronized. A year here on Earth lasts about the same amount of time as a year back on Earth. Ertish saw the confused expression on Stavius's face and relented. A year here on Mirth lasts about the same amount of time as a year back on Earth. Mark might dream he spent a day or a month here on Mirth, but will still wake up the next morning on Earth. However, he probably won't have another dream for a month on Earth if he dreamt he was here for that long. It's not exact, but the two timelines seem to be linked together. How long have you been coming here? Asked Mark. I'm 53 years old, and this is my 11th year visiting since we only conjoin in our primes, answered Ertish. You keep mentioning being fully conjoined. What do you mean by that? Asked Mark and Staven. There will be plenty of time to explain all that, answered Ertish. You should eat your lunch. It's getting cold, and you've hardly touched anything. Okay, but one more question. Why isn't Janice sitting here? Asked Mark and Staven. This is the hero's table, and while Janice is called many things, he is not a hero, answered Ertish. It's best to let him sit alone. This table is reserved for the heroes in training and their guests. The rest of the staff sits at the long table. Who are the rest of the staff? Asked Mark and Staven. We are the hero trainers, answered Ertish. Several of us are past heroes sharing our experience, while others have been brought here by the Soul Reapers for the sole purpose of training heroes. Every one of us is an expert in our field. My, that was an especially delicious lunch. Mark looked out over the faces seated at the long table. Most appeared to be in their 20s or 30s. All seemed to be healthy and fit. It was an impressive collection of educators who were all primed and ready to focus on their one current student. So when do we start? Ertish laughed and replied, Oh, we aren't going to train you. What would be the point? There was a murmur of agreement and a ripple of laughter among the other trainers who had overheard Ertish's remark. What do you mean you aren't going to train us? Mark and Staven asked in disbelief. Didn't you just say that was your job? Well, yes and no, answered Ertish. You see, we already trained your three counterparts and sent them off to fulfill the prophecy. There is no way we could bring you up to a useful level before they either succeed or fail. Besides, you don't have the qualifications. Wait a minute, growled both Mark and Staven. The two boys might be different in many ways, but both had a common dislike for unfairness and both had quick tempers. Didn't the Soul Reapers select us for this role? Yes, admitted Ertish as he stuffed some more corn in his mouth, but they sometimes make mistakes. Not only have you arrived far too late in the year, you are different ages. Also, Staven is far too old and is both physically and magically underqualified. Heroes must be top-notch magicians. I might not be some mighty warlock, but you can train me, argued Staven, and I am far more physically qualified than some 13-year-old. I'm sorry, but while we can hone magical abilities, we're not in the business of remedial magic training, said Ertish, and while you might be larger than a 13-year-old, we've heard about your fighting prowess with that chicken. I'd hardly say that you've proven yourself to be a warrior. The entire table of people laughed while the two mentally joined boys grew flushed with anger. Staven quickly stood up and addressed the long table. Let me get this straight. You are deciding not to do your duty because you feel we are unworthy. And correct me if I'm wrong. You are nothing but a bunch of hero wannabes or ex-heroes who have failed in your attempts at fulfilling this prophecy.
We wouldn't even be here if you had ever succeeded in training any heroes to fulfill the prophecy. So, please explain to me what gives a bunch of losers the right to determine, no, make that the very ability to even recognize potential hero greatness. I really want to know.
All conversation had stopped when Steven said ex-heroes, and no one had moved since. Even Urtish had stopped eating and was now glaring at Steven and Mark.
That was incredibly rude, insensitive, and downright mean, Stavius, he whispered. You should not have said it.
Both Mark and Steven knew he was right, but neither could control his anger, and Mark answered,
Maybe it was insensitive, but you know that it's all true. Just do your job and train us.
Then Steven sat down.
No, it is not true, Stavius, but we will train you if you wish, Urtish softly said with a decided edge to his voice. He looked deeply offended and almost shook with rage.
I promise you that it will be intense after your little outburst. I doubt you will find it at all enjoyable. I'll meet you in the cave at 3 o'clock for your first history lesson. I suggest you find a way to get some perspective before then. Also, you shall henceforth be dining alone at the hero's table.
Urtish and the rest of the trainers then rose and left the dining area without a word.
Steven sighed and thought, What have we done, Mark? He stood to go and felt a tap on his shoulder. One of the villagers was standing close and said,
Stavius, I'm one of your fighting instructors, and I just wanted to introduce myself. He then threw a right hook without warning. Mark saw it coming but couldn't get Steven to put up a block, and the man's fist connected with Steven's jaw, knocking him to the ground.
That's enough, Cran, came a deep voice from a few yards away. We'll begin his physical training tomorrow. Be on the tournament field at 9 tomorrow morning, Stavius, and I advise you learn how to duck a punch.
Steven sat up and rubbed his jaw. His head was spinning, his face hurt, and he tasted blood. But he didn't think there was any permanent damage.
Let me help you up, said a soft, feminine voice with an extended hand. You could use a lesson in perspective before you go any further.
Mark saw a pretty young woman who was perhaps 18 or 19 years old smile at them.
Steven was still groggy, so Mark said, Okay, what do you mean by perspective?
She said, My name is Myra, and the first thing you should know is that your opinion of the people here is completely wrong. She then led him to sit under a small stand of trees overhanging the river on the far side of the village. Very few trainers are ex-heroes, because very few heroes survive. In fact, I can only think of 3 who have ever returned from their attempts. The rest of us were never selected to be heroes, but have instead dedicated our lives to trying to help you succeed.
So we pretty much insulted the only people who can help us, groaned Mark and Steven.
Yes, and it is unforgivable, added Mayra. Everyone here will go through the motions of training you, but no one will truly put their heart into it. You have hurt us more than you can imagine. What you said was untrue, yet it is our greatest unspoken fear. No hero has ever succeeded, even though they are all hand-selected by the Soul Reapers. We fear that their failures were due to us being deficient in our roles. To hear that accusation shouted out loud by a hero trainee is beyond heartbreaking.
Oh, crap, said Mark and Steven. We had no idea. We were just both so mad at not being given a chance.
Well, now you're getting one, said Mayra. The second thing you need to do is to join completely. You'll never be any good to anyone as long as you are separate.
Mark and Steven gave a perplexed look, so Mayra continued.
It is clear that you are still not fully conjoined, boys, she began. For example, what's your name?
Mark and Steven, and we're calling ourselves Stavius when we're together?
Mark replied in a way which is more of a question than an answer.
Exactly, Mayra agreed. You're both sharing Steven's brain and body, but you both still have your own unique identities. I bet that Mark is pretty much hanging back and watching while Steven is in charge.
Not as much as he should, muttered Steven.
You see, you're both in there, continued Mayra, as she jabbed at Steven's head, but you haven't combined your minds into a single consciousness. You haven't yet lost the independent Mark and Steven identities to truly create Stavius. You won't realize your true capabilities until you do.
Hey,
I don't like the sound of losing my identity, and I bet Mark doesn't either, complained Staven.
Perhaps, but it's what you need to do, Mayra assured them. As scary as combining your identity sounds, it is far worse when you separate.
Staven, you're going to be combined with Mark nonstop until whosever birthday is next. Then you'll separate after a year together, and you'll feel alone and empty until you're both in your primes again.
You will have experienced a whole different world through Mark's memories and have had his abilities as part of your own. Then one day, it will all be gone in an instant.
What about me? Asked Mark.
You will have a different challenge, Mark. You will separate from Staven and go on living in your world completely oblivious to what happens here. As you already know, this is all just a dream that is forgotten when you wake up. However, you'll need to adjust to being Stavius every time you return. In some ways, it is easier for you because you won't remember any of this, but that also makes it sad and depressing. All I can say is that the experience of being conjoined is unlike anything you can imagine and is completely worth it.
Okay, so what do we need to do? Asked Mark.
Staven still wasn't entirely convinced.
You'll need to figure that out for yourself, answered Mayra. It requires complete trust and commitment, so most people start by sharing their deepest secrets. You have to accept that your combined entity will know everything each of you knows once you completely merge. There can be no secrets.
Mayra sat with an expectant look on her face.
Are you conjoined? Asked Mark.
Not this year, admitted Mayra, which is why I'm not officially an instructor. You're only allowed to be an instructor in your prime, although you can certainly be an assistant.
So why are you instructing us then? Asked Staven.
Because you need it, because no one else wants to help you, and because it beats washing dishes, laughed Mayra.
Okay, so let's hear your deepest, darkest secrets. It's the first step to becoming fully conjoined, and you are going to need your wits about you before tomorrow's fighting class.
I'm still struggling about sharing my secrets with Mark, said Staven. I'm pretty sure I'm not ready to share them with you, too.
Fair enough, said Mayra as she stood and brushed the leaves off her skirt. I'll leave you two alone to share amongst yourselves. Don't hold back. Then try doing things together. For example, try seeing the world as Mark sees it, or as Staven sees it. You'll discover that you have different points of view, and will find that everything changes when you combine them.
I wish I could describe it better, but you'll know when it starts to happen.
Good luck!
With that remark, she promptly turned and strode off in a swish of skirts.
The two boys sat back down under the tree for several minutes. They argued for a while about who should go first, with each claiming that neither had any significant secrets. Finally, Staven said,
Mark, do you want to do this or not?
Mark admitted that while he was pretty scared about completely mind-melding with Staven, he couldn't imagine quitting now, and Staven agreed. They silently sat for a few more minutes until Mark finally gave up and went first.
I like Nancy Wellington, the team captain of the Pink Strikers, Mark said with embarrassment. He had never said that out loud, not even to his best friend Malik.
Staven was confused and asked, Why is liking someone a secret?
Because I don't just like her, Staven. I mean, I like her.
Oh, you mean that you love her? Answered Staven.
No, Mark replied with panic. I mean, I don't think I love her, but I like her more than in a friendly sort of way, and I've never told her.
Staven rolled his eyes and said, Mark,
I don't care a bit about 13-year-old crushes. Get real.
Okay, then share one of your secrets, Staven, Mark angrily replied.
Fine. Do you remember the house I had to leave after the Chigan incident? Asked Staven.
Well, the reason that was my home is that my family considered me to be such an embarrassment that they sent me to live there along with some money instructions to never be seen by them or any of their friends ever again.
Wow, what did you do to deserve that? Asked Mark.
It's not what I did, it's more what I didn't or couldn't do, answered Staven. Mark could feel his pain and anger even though their minds weren't fully merged.
Everyone in my family is a powerful magician, and I'm not. They disowned me because I suck at magic.
Mark wasn't sure how to respond. Staven was right. This was a lot more serious than his crush on Nancy Wellington, and Mark felt stupid for sharing such a lame secret. He finally decided to ask, when did this happen?
About 8 years ago, said Staven with a sniffle.
Wait, Your parents kicked you out when you were 9 years old? What kind of sick people would do that? Screamed Mark. Suddenly, all the problems he had with his parents and sister seemed trivial by comparison.
A family who relies on their reputations as being some of the most powerful wizards around, answered Steven. By this time, both of them were desperately trying to decide how to change the subject when they felt a sort of shift. It was as though the whole world had just gone slightly out of focus and shaken for a second. Every part of their body, inside and out, seemed to have moved for the briefest of moments and then settled back into place.
I think it's working, said Steven. Your turn.
Mark still wasn't sure what to share and said, Well, it's not a secret on my world, but it's a secret from you. You see, I'm pretty much a geek.
What's a geek? Asked Steven.
Let's say that I'm shy, I'm not good looking, not popular, and the few friends I have are not popular either, said Mark. I'm pretty embarrassed about what you'll think of me if our minds completely meld and you find out everything about me.
Well, that's a pretty lame secret, complained Steven. You have to do better than that.
Hey, who are you to judge? Asked Mark. It's a pretty big deal to me.
Yeah, well, did you feel a shift after admitting it?
No, not really.
Me neither, grumbled Steven before going silent in a huff.
A minute later, Steven sighed and said, Okay, here's the big one. It's the whopper I keep hidden at all costs and not even my family knows. You see, I can't do magic.
I already know you can't do magic very well, said Mark. What's the secret there?
No, you don't get it, said Steven. I can't do any magic at all.
Even his mental voice sounded as though it faltered. I've never told that to anyone in my life.
But I thought that everyone here could do magic, said Mark in disbelief.
Yeah, well, that's what everyone says. Even newborn babies can do simple illusions. It's almost reflexive, but not me.
What do you mean by illusions? Asked Mark.
Steven sighed again and explained that there were various types of magic here, such as illusion, transformation, enhancement, and scaling. He was sure that they were going to be trained on all of them in the coming weeks, and he was dreading it. The simplest and most common form involves creating illusions, which look real but have no substance. He said you could, for example, create an illusion of a flower. It might look solid, but it's not physically there, and you could pass your hand right through it. Basic illusions are the most fundamental forms of magic, although tremendous skill is required to get movement and shadows to appear realistic. It's also the most commonly used form of magic, and the people of Mirth even use the verb illude to mean the act of creating an illusion. Illusion is used everywhere. People wear rags and illude them to be gorgeous gowns. They illude fancy hairstyles rather than combing their hair. They illude themselves to be young and beautiful when in truth, they're old and disgusting. They illude their houses to be pristine when they're a mess. The thing is that everyone creates illusions all the time and no one can tell.
Mark suddenly realized that Mirth might not be as perfect and beautiful as it appeared.
So you can't even do an illusion? He asked with disbelief. He was feeling cheated that he had been drawn into a world with fantastic magic only to be paired with the only non-magical person in existence. He then immediately felt guilty at that thought.
No, I can't do illusions, just like animals can't do illusions, sighed Steven.
What do you mean?
I mean that animals can't do illusions, and illusions don't even work on them, answered Steven. It's something to do with the human mind. Animals don't seem to see them.
Mark paused before daring his next question.
But you can see them, right?
No, Steven glumly answered. I don't see illusions because I seem to have the brain of an animal.
Hey, that's not true, said Mark. I don't have to be fully conjoined with you to see that you're a smart guy.
Thanks, but what other explanation is there, muttered Steven. My nickname was Animal when I was a kid, and perhaps they were right. My family thought so, which is why they sent me away.
And then you were tapped to be a hero destined to save the world, offered Mark. Who cares whether you can see fake images? You're strong, good-looking, and smart. I'd give anything to be like you.
You're a sweet kid, Mark, but you don't get it, said Steven. Who needs to exercise and stay in shape in a world where anyone can make themselves appear beautiful with just a wish?
Wow, this is one sick place, dude, said Mark in amazement.
As soon as he said that, there was another shift, which felt as though their bodies were rapidly turned inside out and made them see double for a moment.
They sat down, and when the ground stopped spinning, Staven said, "I think we're getting close, but you're holding back, Mark. I've given my best. What aren't you telling me?" "Well, remember how Ertish and Mayra said that visitors don't remember this world when they wake up?" asked Mark. "Yeah, I thought that was strange," said Staven.
"Me too," agreed Mark, "especially since I remember everything."
"Whoa, that's something to keep to ourselves, buddy," thought Staven. Then they felt like they were going to throw up, and their world went black as they passed out.